Hello and welcome to The Big Fight. Now, you might have noticed that for the last 5 or 6 weeks, we've essentially had one big subject to talk about, which is demonetization, because frankly, that's all that anybody in the country is talking about. But you may have also noticed that instead of getting into the usual political mudslinging, we've actually tried to, on this particular show, take a look at various aspects of the problem, call the top experts of the field in, and try and get them to help us understand, interpret, and look at the path ahead. And that is what we're going to try and do once again right now. Yes, there are just a few days to go before that deadline ends and everyone finishes depositing their cash. But looking forward, the one big change that we are now hearing about, you don't hear the government talking too much now about black money or counterfeit or even national security, as much as they are saying, look, digital India is coming, digital payments are the future, and that's the big turning point. Once everyone starts using digital payments, tax numbers will go up, people will be filing their income taxes, it'll be a lovely new world out there. So is that really going to happen? Are there lots of slips between the cup and the lip? And are we overhyping this entire digital India business in any case, especially in 2017, when a large number of people don't have access to it? That's the question we're going to try and take a close look at. And joining us, another special panel of experts today who really have all the answers. P.N. Vijay is joining us, representing the BJP, but also a financial analyst, also has been understanding a lot about demonetization and looks ahead at what's going to happen with digital payments in particular. Salman Soz, representing the Congress Party, but also taking a look at some of the other broader issues that we have out here. Prashanta Kumar Roy, one of the top digital gurus that I know of in the country, so it's always great to have you with us. He's the Vice President and the head of the Internet, Mobile and E-commerce Council at NASSCOM and will be able to give us a real expert view on this. Saket Modi, and I'm trying to figure out how quite to introduce you, so you want to introduce yourself, should I call you? You've tried your hand at various things from ethical hacking to advising people. You are, of course, co-founder and CEO of Lucilius Tech. Does that sum it up or do you want to add something else to it?
Well, I hack for a living, so you can call me a hacker. That defines what I do.
You hack for a living. Yes. Have you got into a digital payment gateway yet?
Well, we secure the UPI and most of the banks that you transact with, so you can you should hope
so you're the guardian right now. You're the hacker who is manning the gates.
One of the guardians,
and we will,
yes.
You are also the person I'm going to come back and haunt. If I do start using digital payments and all my money gets stolen, I'm coming and finding you. So Mohan Gurusamy, Chairman, Center for Policy Alternatives, have been with us and taking a look at some aspects of this. Sunil Abraham joining us from Bangalore, Executive Director for the Center for the Internet and Society. And society seems to be, if the government has its way, going entirely onto the Internet, so maybe you want to compress those two terms at some point, Sunil. And finally, we're going to be joined by Deepak Abbott, who's the Senior Vice President at Paytm, a company that right now is literally thinks that Christmas has come early, although it has been facing its own challenges, naturally, in trying to keep pace with everything that's happening. There are other mobile companies, but Paytm's taken an early lead in this. Well, thank you all so much for being with us. Now, before I come to digital, please do bear with me while I spend a few minutes just trying to take a stock of where we are right now in this entire exercise. Now, let's remember, in a couple of days, the official deadline for people going and depositing old notes in banks is going to come to an end. Doesn't mean they can't keep on going and depositing the money in the Reserve Bank of India. They can do that, and by the way, they may continue to do that for reasons that I'm about to outline. What has this all been for? It's been a month and a half. What's it been for? Government said, to start off, counterfeit currencies, all right. Security, terrorists are coming in with Indian currency, and that we are hearing is one of the reasons they did it so fast. Okay. Black money is going to be eradicated. Now, let's pause the button and look at these three reasons. And then after that, we'll come to two new reasons, which subsequently have been spoken about a lot. Number one, the tax base is going to go up because it's much easier now to catch anyone who's dodgy. And so from 2-3% of people paying their taxes, it's going to become 5%, 10%, 20%, and that's really where a revolution will come. That part we will examine a little later. And the fifth part, what we've started off by saying, it's going to be a digital world. Digital payments are here to stay, once again, easy to track. P.N. Vijay, before I say anything more, does that pretty much sum up the government's rationale for all this?
I think you made a fair summation.
What do you think of the reasons in all?
The Prime Minister came up with, first he came up with three reasons for doing this. And clearly the narrative had changed. Lots of things have been changed in these last 50, 45 days or so. And I suspect
you're not talking about the rules, have you? Rules? Have the rules changed at all? The Reserve Bank of India, once it makes up its mind, it does it. It never changes.
Well, that's why they call it the Reserve Bank of India now. So
I was waiting for someone to say that. I'm sure that was coming from somewhere or the other. Yeah. So, yes, we have seen a certain number of rule changes. What is it? 70 in the last thing. But I guess the government will say it's being proactive. As something comes up, they change.
I'm sorry. I mean, if we have so many rule changes within 45 days, that means they did not think it through. Let's just be clear about that.
Okay. Now, let's start off by assessing what the benefits of all of this have been, because we all pretty much know what the pain has been. Now, let's try and look at the benefits again. So, let's just park counterfeit currency. It's not that high a number, but let's assume that's happened. 400 crores or 500 crores or whatever. And let's assume the national security part has happened. Now let's look at black money. And I just want to take you through some numbers, because in the next week to 10 days, I would like you all to stay glued to your TV screens and to the newspapers to try and assess a couple of very important numbers that are going to come out. First of all, how much old of that cash reserve, how many of those old notes are actually going to get deposited? A crucial number. Here's why. There were 15.4 lakh crores in old notes that existed. These were banned on the 8th of November. Now, let's assuming all of them come back, and I've been saying this during this week. If all of them come back, either there was no black money to start with, in which case all of us are going to say, what was this entire exercise about? But we don't believe that. I'm sure there was black money. Possibility number two, they were able to launder the black money. And if it is possibility number two that eventually comes to pass, the money all comes back in. And why does the money come back in? Because the fat cats and the rich people and all the crooks in the country were able to launder their money. There are going to be a lot of very angry people. They're saying this should not have happened. So that's why possibility two is a cause of some concern for the government, which is why the government is now pushing possibility three. All the money has come back. It's come back because people are about to declare their black money under the amnesty scheme. This we will not know the answer to till March. March, right, is when the amnesty scheme actually comes to an end. The numbers for this will start coming out in April.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if a lot of the money comes back in, then we will only be able to judge whether this entire demonetization has been a success or a failure from the point of view of getting black money out, once we know whether people were able to launder their black money, in which case it was a failure, or whether they have declared it and the government has made a ton of money in tax and penalty, in which case you could argue it was a success. Is that a fair summary?
You're absolutely right. The summary is right. The money could be zero to whatever, 15.5 lakhs.
The thing Your friend Bibik Debroy said 2 lakhs, 2 lakh crores
yeah,
might be coming back.
It's a moving target. As you said, it's a moving target. People have still time to go to the banks and then to the RBI. You see, if you agree, and all of us would agree, that black money is something which has not been taxed and which is not in the system, that's black money. If through this whole exercise, the entire money or a very substantial portion has come into the system. System, I mean, into a bank account which is KYC'd and which has got a PAN number to it. And it is up to the particular bank client to either say it is an income of mine, pay 50% tax, or just conceal it, don't say anything. The tax man gets at you, just takes the chance, and he pays 81% tax plus prosecution.
If the guy is caught,
okay.
If they are
now,
caught, you know and I know
that
the stories that we have been hearing for the last 10 to 20 days really make your toenails curl. The ways and the imaginative methods by which people are launching
their
money.
That's another argument. That's a big fight altogether. We're just looking at the macro numbers and trying to draw some macro conclusions in a professional way, right? So what we're saying is this amount of untaxed money, black money, has come into the system, has become transparent, and is liable for tax, right? And we have a trace, we have a track on every paisa of that. And that, I think, is a big achievement.
Okay. We don't know what the number is going to be, right? So we are hearing estimates that maybe 2 lakh crores will be extinguished, will not be redeposited. Although I'm not 100% sure why that would happen, because logically, if you, instead of tearing up notes, it makes sense to deposit the money and say 50% of it goes to the government, at least you get 50%. So the government will make some money in this through that amnesty scheme. It could be 50,000 crores, 1 lakh crore, 2 lakh crores. We don't know how much it's going to make. Would you say that justifies the exercise?
Absolutely, we'll come to the other benefits. Absolutely not. You see, the problem with our government is the following. They'll always tell you what the benefits are. They'll never talk about the costs. In anything, you should always look at the benefits and the costs. If, for example, I take your number, 2 lakh crores, what is the cost of these 45 days, plus not just these 45 days? A real cost is going to be come with a lag. It's going to come later.
But do you accept the basic argument?
By the way, let me just put it on record. I fundamentally disagree with demonetization as a policy. Please, let me finish.
Your former prime minister said that he thinks the idea is good, but the execution is bad.
Let me tell you what he's suggesting. The idea is to go after black money. The idea is to try and reduce corruption and all these kinds of things. But the way you do it, the ideas that you put forward, that has to be looked at, benefits and costs. Now, if you take 2 lakh crore rupees, and then see what the cost is to the economy, I'll just give you one number from today's newspaper. Companies that are FMCG companies, fast-moving consumer goods companies, soap, shampoo, toothbrushes, those kinds of things, their valuation in the market has gone down by 1.2 lakh crores.
That's the stock market.
Let me finish. What does that mean? What are people? It may be funny, but this is where the shoe pinches you. What people are seeing is in the valuation is what is the business going to be like in the future? What are people doing with the money? They're not able to spend. They're not able to earn. When people are not able to earn, they're not able to spend. You know, the Prime Minister yesterday said or tweeted that I urge the young people to go cashless, get digital wallets, etc. I said, Prime Minister, you promised 2 crore jobs a year. You give them jobs, they'll get money, they'll deposit it in your bank wallets, e-wallets, and other things.
The damage to the economy is huge. Mark my words, the damage is coming. Fine. Based on what we are seeing right now, the possible benefits that are coming directly on an attack on black money, has it been justified? Or are you also disappointed, as many people are, by the staggering different number of ways and scale to which people have been able to launder their black money?
First of all, Vikram, this is not demonetization. Yes. What you have is a simple currency exchange. You're junking an old 500 rupee and 1,000 rupee notes and saying getting new notes. Demonetization is when you change the currency, you change the value of the currency. The rupee is still the basic.
I'll tell you why I'm disputing what you're saying. It is demonetization for one reason.
Okay.
You have taken 15.4 lakh crores out of the system, and because for some bizarre reason, which nobody till today has been able to explain to me, the government didn't print notes in advance. Precisely. 1.5 months later, they've only been able to re-inject 6 lakh
Precisely.
Crores
That's
into
an
the
act
system.
Of stupidity.
15 and a half lakhs, gone. 6 lakhs back in.
That's an act of stupidity, Vikram, not demonetization. Demonetization, currency exchanges have taken place before.
Correct.
In 2008, we had currency exchange. New 500 rupee notes came. The old ones went out. We've had 100 rupee notes changing. All kinds of things have happened before. Okay, certain types of currency, you know, values have been removed. All this has happened before. It meant orderly transition. What you could have had is another orderly transition. But the government said it is going after black money. Money on which taxes were not paid. Now, out of the total black money, only 4% was being held in cash. 46% is held in property and buildings, 22% in gold, and 26% kept abroad. You've not done anything on this.
Okay.
You've gone on cash. And out of the cash, a lot of black money has gone back into the system, and it'll come out because, you know, when you have to file your returns at the end of the year, you will have to accept that this is...
So there is some benefit.
But what is the cost? The cost, you asked me. There are 415 million people who are in the unorganized sector in this country, out of which 215 million people are daily wage labor. What you've done is shut down daily wage labor almost 50%. The construction business, which employs 44 million, is now almost dormant. The small retailer is almost dormant. That is the vegetable and fruit vendor is almost finished. Farm labor has been left out, the construction labor. So you've knocked out 100 million people from their daily employment. No money. The average wage in this country for a worker, unorganized sector, is 272 rupees. So that is enough money to cover a family for a day. If you don't have that money, you're starving. And that's what this government has done.
Your overall take, though, on how demonetization has panned out?
You know, I think it was a very bold gamble, and without now, enough has been discussed on the merits and demerits, and I'm not going there. I believe that bold gamble did tackle with aim for both the things and maybe other things, maybe the UP elections and all of that. But black money, now it looks like that may or may not work out, maybe it won't work out. But digital, now that digital is not as much of an afterthought as people are thinking, because across the year there have been a number of initiatives around digital, not least of which 3 months ago a very empowered committee was set up to actually overhaul the digital payments structure. And that committee was actually under a lot of pressure to give its report, give a very comprehensive report well in time. Okay, so it does look like there was some planning on the digital side of it. And
so
now,
it's not something which is added, it is an integral part of it.
It's plan A1B maybe.
Okay.
No, you know,
just on the cost versus benefit.
I'd like to say, point out certain facts, that the fact that the mass of Indian humanity is in shatters and, you know, that fabulous, you know, Holocaust atmosphere that people are trying to create. If there was, come on, just finish me. If that was so, how do you explain across the board in municipalities, the BJP winning huge wins, even in areas where Congress is traditionally strong?
You are not, till now, it could change. And I'm saying, and one of the things that you need to be careful of is, if it comes out that all the big fish got away, maybe that will change. The atmosphere will change to suddenly become anger.
We have conducted more raids in the last 1 month than in the last 3 years.
Yeah, but Inspector, you should
know
that raids do not
change. You've got to do something about it. You're saying catch the black bat. How do you catch a guy?
Fine.
We raided the chief secretary of a state.
Right now, A, they are winning elections, and B, anecdotally, it's not that you're coming across crowds of people protesting on the streets, saying Modi, hi. It's not happening right now.
Okay. So I want,
and you've been trying to whip it up, but it's not been happening.
I want everybody to hear me carefully. Everybody watching at home, I'll talk about the Maharashtra municipal elections because that the Prime Minister tweeted about it. Let me give you facts. In 2014 assembly election in Maharashtra, BJP fighting on its own without Shiv Sena's help got 42% of the seats. It got 56% of the urban seats. Okay, in this municipal election, fighting with the Shiv Sena, they got 24% of the seats, and Congress got 20% of the seats fighting without NCP. Now, if, by the way, anybody disputes that, I'm willing to challenge them. That means
BJP has been winning elections.
Since demonetization has happened, remember Amit Shah, the president of BJP, tweeted that demonetization, this is really, people love it, right? You must have heard it. But if that is the case, why is it that after three phases in Maharashtra, the data shows that BJP has come down in the urban areas and semi-urban areas from 56% seats to 24% fighting with Shiv Sena and Congress by itself?
Let's just do some very unscientific snap polling. Okay, all of
you
guys
have lost.
Hang on. With the rider that this is a random sample and it's an urban audience and the rest of it, I'm just saying, okay, 50 days. Prime Minister Modi said, give me 50 days. 50 days have passed. Today, how many of you think that demonetization was good? Raise your hands, those who think it was good. Raise it higher so we can count. It's still a significant number of people who feel that way. Now, can I ask you a question? The question that I asked. Why do you feel that demonetization was good?
There's a huge amount of black money in India, and if someone grabs me out and asks me that give him or her a black money, so I can't say him that okay, just wait for it, I'm providing you a check. So it's demonetized. We won't be left with any paper notes.
We already had some tax guys and others coming and saying, give us bribes, and we were seeing it on Twitter that can they
Sir, but further policies can be implied to stop that.
You said you support this, right? And he also said that it's because there's a crackdown on black money. Supposing it was to come out that a lot of the people who had black money were able to do something with it. They were able to do setting, they were able to do jugaad, they were able to get away. Would you still support it?
I don't support jugaads at all. But I truly believe that they cannot be like hiding those things. It will be revealed by the time.
All right. So it will eventually come out, is what she's saying.
I think we have gone out and record, the PM and all of us, to say that this is going to be one of several steps. And you will observe, just a few days back, the Election Commission said this present limit of 20,000 rupees for disclosure. And then they wanted a recommendation for they wanted to do it to 2,000 rupees, which means there's more transparency in election funding. The PM was the first person to lift the mic and say, I'm all for it. Let us do it from these elections.
All of us are wanting to know why is it that political parties are allowed to go
That's a different issue. That's a different issue.
Less than 20,000 rupees in donation.
The problem today, the Prime Minister and the BJP are supporting the idea that any election payment to a party above 2,000 rupees should be documented with a PAN card. I request the Congress also to support it.
Can I ask something very a simple question for all of you to consider? When the Prime Minister had to appoint a principal secretary to his office, he brought in an ordinance. He did.
What is the relevance of this?
Why did he not bring an ordinance to say that not just 2,000 rupees, everything would be done transparently?
Would the Congress Party support it?
We will support the Prime Minister. Let him bring it up. We'll support the Congress Party.
Glad to hear that. Why doesn't he do it? Why doesn't he bring an ordinance to the Congress Party? I think Salman should be told, this is the prerogative of the Election Commission.
No, it is not. We cannot do that.
Theoretically, handling India's currency is the prerogative of the Reserve Bank.
But isn't the Prime Minister doing that?
So we are living in a theoretical world. Okay, now guys,
not only.
One second. Now, let me just take this a step forward. How many people were able to launder their money? We will know those numbers in the next few days, few weeks, few months. And let's hope that the number is better than I'm fearing and what people are fearing out there. Let's hope that a lot of people are getting caught. Now, let's look ahead at the two other big things that are being stated. Number one, because so many people have now come out, as you said, the cash has come out in the system, people have deposited it, people who have been trying to launder it and who are doing dirty deals or whatever it is, they will get caught. And they will come into the system. So that's number one. Your tax base is going to expand because more and more people are coming into the tax net. That's fine. And the linked thing is digital, which is what we are really here to talk about. Digital payments also helps in that because people tend to get caught. Just on the first aspect of it, I wanted to ask you, and I'm going to throw it to everyone else in as well. Historically, we have seen that when you try and get people to pay more taxes by doing the Inspector Raj approach, that their income tax officials are going to come and raid you and beat you on the head and get taxed out, it doesn't work.
Get paid.
The reason it doesn't work is because the typical person who's going and doing the reading, you can't guarantee that that person is honest. So quite often, that's where the corruption comes from. Sometimes, and not sometimes, a lot of the times, you'll hear innocent industrialists who will be telling you, well, you know, tax guys are coming after us and they're asking us for a bribe we don't know how to pay. So purely doing it by an Inspector Raj approach is not necessarily going to work.
Of course, Vikram, I agree with you totally. And I think everybody in this audience, the audience and the panel will agree that Inspector Raj, License Raj, Permit Raj, which Rajaji talked about under Nehru's time, were the bane of Indian economy. Now, all that I can say is when you go towards a digital economy, it's a great opportunity. I'm not claiming Modi started it. I think there are significant steps done by the Congress Party. The digitalization of the income tax assessment procedure, the digitalization of service tax, the digitalization of company law filings, company law was all done by Chidambaram, and I've openly congratulated Chidambaram one-to-one and in public. So there is no, and Nandan Nilkini was brought in by Dr. Manmohan Singh, and we took on where he left. Aadhaar was brought in. All that I want to say is one of the great benefits we could achieve from a digital economy is more transparency in the working of government and more systems, because I believe systems is the only way to reduce corruption in this country. I'll give you a simple example, income tax department. Income tax department today chooses for scrutiny less than 2% of the cases based on a computer thing which nobody knows. It's very secret, which means that in 98.5% of people who file returns, the return is filed digitally, the return is assessed digitally, the return assessment order under 143 is issued digitally. The refund order, where there used to be a lot of petty corruption, as you know, is given digitally.
I agree with you.
We should do that for property. We should take this opportunity, and frankly, with the help of gentlemen like him, to digitalize the whole system.
Now you're talking, now we're going to come to all of you on this, because that, more than an Inspector Raj, you could actually take it one step forward.
Most Indians will be corrupt, given the chance. Why is it
that any government official, including anybody with coercive powers like the income tax department or somebody else, if they are going after somebody who is innocent, who's wrong, there should be an accountability for that. There should be a punishment. There should be a black mark. There should be some way of making sure that they are empowered to go and investigate
income tax,
and survey.
Environment. Everybody has a power to coerce you.
Yes.
You know, with jail power, sales tax and put you to jail.
So why is it that no one's ever punished for harassing an innocent person?
Search me. I mean, really, it's a 70-year problem, yeah.
55% of all Indians have paid bribes at some time or the other. That's their own record. And who collects it? By the same inspectors, these rent collectors, these registrars, they all collect bribes. The police.
So while they have powers, corruption is not going away.
Absolutely.
And if you increase their powers by giving them more powers under an Inspector Raj, corruption doesn't go down, it goes up.
You see, collection of taxes is always by conditioning and coercion. Even in the United States, they use coercion. If you don't pay, they send you to jail. Al Capone went to jail not for murders, but for tax evasion. We don't send anybody to jail for tax evasion.
You so got want people, more coercion.
You know, I want more coercion of that kind. And I want more income tax officers to go to jail. And I want more IAS officers to go to jail. That doesn't happen.
If they are harassing somebody wrongly.
No, no.
Or if they are colluding and
Vikram,
taking money.
Vikram, they are considered source of 30% of the so-called black money, which is coming into the system. Bureaucracy. You got to tame your bureaucracy. It's out of control.
Okay.
And it's got a bureaucracy which only tells you what to do and does nothing for you.
So let me now broaden it. So, Salman, on the basic principle of this, this is one area where, all right, there's a case to be made that if you move to a new system where a lot more is digital, where a lot more is happening system-based as opposed to discretion-based, mm-hmm. then in that, you know, golden land, you will have much less corruption, much less black money, happier people, sunshine, daffodils.
Well, don't be so sarcastic about it.
No, I'm just saying.
couple of things.
Because we haven't yet been able to do it in most countries. But I'm saying it's the right
thing. I'd like to say something here.
Let me first, I want to thank Vijayji for saying some good things about Pandit Nehru, our first prime minister. Not many BJP and RSS people do that anymore. Second, he acknowledged the work that the UPA government did, including, by the way, the National Payments Corporation of India and the Unified Payments System,
National
which
Stock
actually
Exchange,
helps.
If you want to add, National Stock Exchange.
Which actually helps us go digital. But I also want, again, to put something out there. Whenever you think about costs, whenever somebody says benefits, it should raise your antenna. You should say, what are the costs? Let me give you a simple example. The cash to GDP ratio, cash to economy ratio in India is about 12%. In Japan, it is about 20%. In Brazil, it is about 4%. Japan is widely considered to be not a corrupt country. But the Transparency International ranking of perceptions of corruption, India is ranked 76th, Brazil is ranked 76th.
What that should Kenya, where 76% of people are using mobile payments, it has got a perception of being
corrupt. What I'm trying to get at is if somebody says digital is a panacea for anti-corruption efforts and all that, it is not.
It's not a panacea. Is it a step in the right
step? Now,
others in now. So, Salman, one second. Let me now get these gentlemen have hardly had a say, and let me now get Sunil Abraham into it also, and Deepak Arab. So, Sunil Abraham, first of all, your take on this general direction. Look, today there will be a certain amount of skepticism. Why will there be skepticism? People are going to say that, look, internet penetration in India, 27%, if I remember the number correctly, and that's largely on the back of a much higher percentage in urban areas, 50-60%. It's much lower in rural areas. Are we anywhere close to saying that enough will be happening digitally to actually make a dent on all of these issues that we are talking about?
Unfortunately, not. The trouble with the design of the Aadhaar project, which was started under the previous regime and continues under the current regime, is that all it does is make citizens transparent to the state, but it does not make the state transparent to citizens. So what we are seeing is with every generation of corruption-busting technology, we are having a new generation of corruption being introduced into society. Let's first answer the question, why is it that huge numbers of new notes are being confiscated during the raids, but these notes are not to be found in the ATM machines? This is because a black market in Aadhaar numbers has been created in many cities. Unfortunately, because of our obsession with KYC, we insist that people give photocopies of their Aadhaar cards whenever they procure mobile phones or go to schools for admission. These photocopies are being procured whole scale by criminals. And then those photocopies are being used by bank officials to launder black money in cash without letting the money reach the bank accounts. We should have made sure that the bank officials had the Aadhaar numbers first and that they were being tracked through enhanced surveillance before subjecting the poor to surveillance.
I think you make a important point. Just pause the thought on that. I'm going to throw it to everybody else. I mean, I really love the phrase that he just used, that sometimes it makes citizens transparent to the government and not government transparent to the citizens. And everything that we've been talking about right now, if you want corruption to end, then that's what really has to happen. Is the present digital system being gamed? Now, as somebody who's been, ethically hacking everything, is there a substantial amount of fraud that is happening? Are these new great digital systems that we're talking about open for hacking or for unscrupulous people to misuse it?
So, you know, before I come to that, just 60 seconds on the part where if you zoom out and see the largest bank in the world, JP Morgan Chase, spends $300 million a year on their cybersecurity budget, and it's been publicly very badly hacked around 3 years back. And that's not just the case with the largest bank of the world. We've seen DNC, we've seen Yahoo, we've seen Ashley Madison, and there's a long list which is there. When you talk about technology, there is nothing called 100% security. However, you don't talk about mitigating the risk, you talk about managing the risk. Considering, of course, the kind of work that companies like ours and a lot of other companies are doing, and considering the amount of focus and the increase in spend that has come, especially in the last 12 months, on the digital payments infrastructure, I can say that it's a very, very positive direction that we are going towards. And there are still a lot of loopholes which exist. But again, it's the chicken and the egg story. It's not that you can
started and then you'll be able to figure out the loopholes.
Yeah, there'll be challenges. The challenges.
Deepak Abbott, let me just turn to you. Because for Paytm, I was saying when we started the show, the Paytm may have thought that Christmas really came early this year when the Prime Minister stood up and said, well, that's it, there's no cash, everyone, you know, Paytm Karo, you know, he didn't quite say that, but that essentially was the message that came out, seeing as you guys are the largest. There are a number of other players as well. But have you found it difficult to cope with the rush? And are our systems today, and even though you're the largest private, you know, e-payment gateway, are our systems ready for this? Where we say, well, you know, 1.3 billion people are going to start paying things digitally.
Even before 8th November, Paytm was growing at about 20% month on month. So we were anyways geared up for 5 to 10x growth in about a year's time.
If I can put it directly to you, there have been reports that even Paytm and other companies have been struggling to deal with exactly what is happening. You know, sometimes the system has been going down. They've been talking about hacking attacks, other things. Are you being able to cope, or is this too big a step for all of you put together, let alone one company, to be able to handle?
First of all, you know, hacking attempts, yes, there's a load on our servers, there's load on technology, there's load on infra, and we've been, you know, facing some really big spikes, and it happens during certain days, certain time of the day. Now that we know that this is here to stay, and cashless or less cash, whatever you call it, is here to stay, we are basically, as of now, as we speak, now we're prepared for around 5 to 6x growth in the next 6 months.
I'm just trying to get a reality check out here and just help us, Pika Roy, with this. If you look at the sort of statistics that we've been seeing till now, actually, India's not, I mean, 13, how many people in India actually have access to things like ATM machines? India today is still home to 21% of the world's unbanked adults. Now, you've also been studying, PKR, some of the data that we are seeing right now. UCPI, you know, USSD, these are all great buzzwords that we've been hearing for the last 10, 20, 30 days. How big are they becoming? Are they really denting the issue? How many USSD transactions, for example, have there been?
Probably about 1,000. What
did you just say?
Maybe it's gone into a few thousand now. So USSD
transactions.
USSD is not a very good example. It's not very easy to use. It's a bit of a challenge.
But USSD 99#, was what the government came out and said 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago. This is the way that everyone who doesn't have a smartphone is going to be able to make digital payments.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Bikram,
50% of India, 700 million people.
You know,
he said that 3,000
transactions. The growing thing in this world or in this universe is the growth of these Paytms and free charge.
Yes,
so don't worry about USSID. Don't get public sector banks, private sector banks. look at
why
the convenience.
Why not get them into it? Because
no,
so
you see,
Paytm
you see,
cannot be used on
Vikram,
a smart, Paytm can't be used on
Vikram,
a feature phone.
Vikram, let me.
How many Indians have smartphones?
You made a pretty drastic statement in the beginning. As of 15th December, 25.98 crores of Jandan accounts have been opened. As per Rama Bijapurkar's much admired annual report, ICE report, which came out 3 or 4 days back, 98% of Indians have access to bank accounts. 98%.
So it's changed thanks to Jandan. Yes, that's possible.
Changed
it has
so
been
dramatically.
Well, let's get this
you are in some other planet.
Zero and I tell
balance. You, just one more statistic.
Zero balance.
One well, more
some
statistic.
Some of them have got laundered money.
One more statistic.
Absolutely.
You know, one more statistic.
Rubbishing.
One more statistic.
Figures.
So that's the
you know, that is the capability we have.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Tremendous savings have been got in directing spending for subsidies, etc. Huge spendings, so, which we are recognizing.
No.
Now, as far as the smartphones are concerned, we got 20 crore smartphones out of 90 crore mobile phones. These are mobile ATMs. Technology is being developed. Technology is not yet perfected, that even without smartphones, you can do payments. But
yes,
even 20 crore is a huge number. That's what I'm trying to say.
Hang on. I'm sure it's a huge number. What I'm trying to get from all of you right now to help us understand exactly how much more pain is in store for this country for the next month or 2 months or 3 months is 1.2 billion Indians were using cash, right? That's a figure we can all agree on. Now that's gone, at least 85% or 86% of that cash has gone. 15.4 crores gone, 6 lakh crores reintroduced. If stability is to return through digital means, you need to get a lot of people out there using it. That's why I'm a bit concerned about his 3,000
so
US dollars.
We don't have those numbers yet. If you look at the numbers today, even the penetration numbers don't give you whether it's bank account or mobile phones. For instance, 1.088 billion mobile subscriptions doesn't translate into that many people. It's
exactly
about 610 million actual humans using it. So it's really early days. But the ramp up at this point is enormous.
But
now, USSD is not a good example because it's terrible technology.
Yeah,
okay,
exactly.
Now you're trying to bring in people who are semi-literate, who are basically down the ARPU in the socioeconomic pyramid, very, very low average revenue per user, et cetera, for the telecom people. Those people are just the people who actually need smartphones. And right now, I think we'll see payments as a very major driver for adoption here. So if you're going to, if Digital India wants
rate,
a billion
see,
people.
Because here's the issue, growth rate by itself, let's say there are 5 million or 10 million or 30 or 40 million people who are using
very small
payments,
right now. Okay.
To get them to 1.2 billion in X amount of time is going to require exponential
growth.
But
keep in mind
rates
that you have a base, so for example, 660 million debit cards, out of which only 10% are activated.
Yeah.
Okay, now there is suddenly a force which will probably get that 10% to 20,
okay,
30, 40.
So let me get Sunil onto this. Let me get Sunil onto this. And I'm going to come back to get final thoughts from all of you on just the scale of the challenge. Sunil, help us understand what is your sense, Sunil, and how fast we will get to a position where, let's say, 30% of all transactions or 50% or 70% of all transactions are digital.
It's very hard for me to put an exact time frame on the question that you're asking me, but I can talk about some of the issues that still have to be addressed. The first issue is usability. If you compare USSD-based solutions to smartphone-based solutions, usability is a big concern, especially for non-literate users, users that are not familiar with English, users that can't type precise syntax. So that's an area that we have to work on. The second is accessibility. For about 6% of our population that has various kinds of disability, some providers like Paytm have paid attention to accessibility for the disabled, but others don't, especially UPI enabled bank applications. There's a lot of accessibility work that still needs to be done to address the needs of the disabled. Moving on to security, this is a field where we are seeing rapid deployment of various solutions. USSD itself has certain challenges because telcos implement GSM encryption differently across their networks. On some telco networks, you could easily set up an off-the-air interceptor and steal USSD transactions or spoof them. And then finally, we have to address two other huge issues, which is reducing the cost of the hardware so that smartphones are affordable. In this area, my center has done a lot of research around patent pooling and compulsory licensing so that the cost of the intellectual property can drop. And second, we need to have a much better vision for public Wi-Fi and greater penetration of broadband.
Yeah,
if
I
you
mean,
look
broadband
at what TRAI is proposing today, if you look at what TRAI is proposing today for public Wi-Fi penetration, they are saying every single public Wi-Fi user should use Aadhaar. Every public Wi-Fi user should pay through UPI. They are unnecessarily using the centralized infrastructure of the UID, which will make the solution very fragile and actually interfere with Wi-Fi adoption in the country across the world. Whenever countries have pushed for KYC, this has resulted in lower public Wi-Fi and broadband adoption.
All right, can I just, before I come back to all of you here in the studio, Deepak, let me get your sense of it. Today, what would be your assessment of the percentage of Indians who are using e-payment solutions?
With 650 million debit cards. So that's a starting point.
175
so technically,
million.
Every debit card is enabled for an e-payment, right? So you can technically go to a shop which has a POS machine and do a digital transaction. Obviously, there's scarcity of POS machines in India. There are only about 1.4 million POS machines. My estimate, because you know we have 170 million users, and there are about another 30 odd wallet companies which would put together would have about 220, maybe 230 million people who can
so
accept.
So today, hang on. I'm just noting it down as you move. You're saying today, something like 200 to 220 million Indians have access to e-wallets of some sort or the other. And I can see PK Roy nodding his head,
yes,
so he's agreeing with those numbers. So 220 million to get to a billion means we have to take it up five times or six times to take it up.
We are currently at about 80% cash transactions by gross volume, including RTGS and everything. So 20% is electronic. The aim is to make that about 50% by 2020. Now, keep in mind, Sweden
You said 50% by 2020.
Yeah.
And so therefore, we have to do with 50 to 60% of cash till that time.
Well, I mean, that was the original plan. Now, we need some disruptive ideas to change that. Some of those regulatory changes are, but keep in mind, 80 to 50% is a huge jump. Sweden is at 2%.
It will be a huge jump if it's done. Yeah.
Sweden is at 2% cash.
But I think, in all of this, in that sort of a surge, if it does happen, the biggest risk, I think, in getting that adoption is if suddenly security becomes a big issue. If people start to panic about giving their numbers and giving their this, oh, you know, somebody gets hacked and there's some scandal somewhere and, you know, whatever happens, it'll set it back. Are you reasonably confident that in doing surges like that, security will be taken care of?
You're asking me if security will be an issue, Vikram. I'm telling you security will be an issue. You can't go from a 20% to a 50% without frauds, without problems happening. It's just about minimizing that as much as you can, both technically and through policies and by getting the right people. Currently, of course, there is a massive deficiency when you talk about both in the government having the right kind of human resources who understand security in the right way. But again, there's a push for that we see over the last couple of months that's happening.
So his basic PK Roy's statement, and I want to throw that to everybody else. He says, struggle and push to get to 50% digital payments by 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a realistic goal?
I feel that's a very realistic goal, yes.
Now with demonetization, but not, it's got a real push.
But not. I mean, you don't think it's going to be 50, 60% by 2017 end?
From 20% to 30% in the
next 12 months. So you're saying 30% by the end of 2017?
That's what
digital payments.
Absolutely.
So end of 2017, that's 1 year from now,
right.
You're saying the country will still be 70% cash and 30% digital.
That's how it looks like right now.
We better start printing more notes, Mohan Goraswamy. That's the point that I'm trying to get to.
Vikram, 12% of GDP comes from cash transactions. But 68% of transactions take place in cash. That only suggests that each transaction is very small, 100 rupees, 50 rupees. That's the kind of transaction you're involved in. And the kind of cost Salman keeps asking is, what is the cost you're imposing? This 100 rupee note, last 1,000 times, this is almost given.
That with care, Mohan.
This is signed by Subba Rao, so it's almost coming to the end of his life. Last for 1 year, okay? 1,000 transactions take place on average note. And each time you do one of these Paytm, you know, whatever else the Prime Minister is hawking, you do those transactions, its cost is 1.5 to 2%. So on this, yeah,
100 rupees, that's a completely wrong number.
Each time you do it, it's a 1 lakh rupees transaction. Do your numbers. Look at the cost. The cost of printing new notes. This note will cost 2 rupees.
I'm going to give you the final words on this.
So who's getting the money?
Let me tell you about the challenges that we face. 90% of transactions with debit cards were at ATMs collecting cash, okay? When you think about debit cards, that's one. We should also look at what other countries have done. In the North American market, 52% of the population has done mobile transactions. 52% in the North American market. That's one of the most advanced markets in the world. But only 18% of those people do them regularly. When people tell you we're going to be cashless or less cash in 50, 60, 70%, pay attention. It is not so easy. Second, not that we should not try, but if we do try, we should keep in mind some costs. Security, privacy. Now, how many of you know that if you have a bank account, PNB, whatever account, that your money is insured for up to 1 lakh rupees, your deposits? If you have 2 lakh rupees in deposits and the bank fails, and by the way, 4,000 banks have failed in the United States since 1938, an average of 53%.
US is worse than that in India. India, banks don't fail.
Let me finish. No, it's easy to say they don't fail because somebody else is paying.
PSU banks, the government bails
because
them out.
The government pays for it, the taxpayer pays for it.
Yeah, but the now, banks don't fail.
What happens if your digital money is lost? Who pays? Do you know? Does anybody know? Nobody knows because the regulations are not in place. They're putting the cart before the horse.
That will change.
That will change over time. Where are they?
But my point is,
the Prime Minister continues to sell us benefits. He does not tell us about the cost.
Look, I think most people would be in agreement that, yes, as you move to more digital, as you get better systems in place, as you can use e-governance and remove discretions, yes, it is a wonderful place to get to. But I think if I am to sort of summarize what I have heard from all of the key experts out here, and all of these are the guys who are really working at it, we shouldn't also fool ourselves into believing that there's a solution which is going to be coming from digital 1 month from now or 2 months from now. 30% by the end of 2017. So we still need to figure out what we're doing with the other things. We still need to figure out how to print more cash.
Of course, Vikram. I think it's nobody's case that digital Paytm and free charge are going to substitute the cash. I mean, it's nobody saying it.
It's been sounding that the government is saying that.
I don't think. You know, it is our job to encourage new things.
Right.
It is our job to encourage. And I'm really sad. I mean, I'm saying it very, very, as an Indian, that the Congress is so negative about digital economy. I mean, it says banks will go kaput, and I mean, like, it's a
We have to respond. It's fear-mongering.
Your thing will be hacked.
No. You have to be sensible. That is wrong. I'm sorry. They'll call us Pakistanis. That is absolute rubbish. We do not accept those kinds of things. We have to look out for the interests of the people.
You know, when National Stock Exchange and the depository system came, we had the same type of guys. At that time, fortunately, Manmohan Singh took a very strong stand, who kept on saying, "Aap ko share dub jayega," this, you know, like all sorts of this type of, you know, just to get some brownie points in some big fight, to question everything that the government is doing is, I think, it's very sad.
And the people of India
are not going to. If you're saying digital economy is bad, I don't think you're going to get too many votes. We're not saying that. We need safeguards. We want to save money. I want to say one thing. I want to. So are we on the deadline for depositing cash? No, you have till 31st March, as you yourself said. Go to RBI.
Digitalization is a fig leaf for demonetization now.
Vikram, I want to tell you.
He just said digitization is the fig leaf for demonetization.
No. They like to say these one-liners and all that. We are the citizens of running this country.
I don't belong to
them. No.
You see, I was
Vikram,
there before you. Yet,
I have great faith in the people of India.
You've heard it here. You've heard it from all the experts. Crucial days are coming up. We'll see how many people deposit their cash. We will then see how much of that is actually declared under the amnesty scheme as tax and penalty. That number will be important. We will then also be able to assess how many people were able to get away by laundering their money. And all of that is going to decide the future of how demonetization will be seen, success, failure, and so on and so forth. The overall thrust to digitization, I think most people will agree, step in the right direction, has to be done. The more it goes, the better it is. But if the experts are to be believed, don't believe that it's going to transform everything in the next week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. It is going to take a lot of time. India is a big country, 1.2 billion people are a lot of people. It takes time to change. And we'll be continuing to watch that change. Maybe we're going to take a break from this for a week or 2 weeks right here on The Big Fight as we get to the new year. But otherwise, we'll be back again, continuing to take you through all twists and turns in this particular landmark development that we have seen in 2016. That's The Big Fight. We'll be back next week. Bye for now.